Danielli a 4-2 defeat at the hands of the Dodgers. The Blue Jays' fifth straight loss. Given that this is identical, essentially, to all the other losses we've seen, for the most part, maybe we just replay one of those shows. What do you think? Andrew, Tom, just cue up one of the old shows. Listen to some Blair and Barker. Even for me, it doesn't even really matter. Largely the same stuff we've seen all season. You know, I actually know if you saw this during the game. Sportsnet stats, Steve Fellin and the crew cooking this one up. And I think it is a stat that will not surprise very many people. So the Blue Jays were 0-35 since the 2023 MLB All-Star break when trailing by three or more runs. They are MLB's only winless team in that span. And today, that stat became 0-36, and they lose 4-2 to the Dodgers.
Show, that's wild. I saw another wild stat just as the game wrapped up. The Jays haven't held a lead in the last 37 innings. It's been 37 innings since this ball club has led a baseball game. That's the longest streak, show, in franchise history. Not good. Now, that being said, today's was a little bit different in the sense that it is Tyler Glasnow. You know, you're facing an elite, elite arm on the opposite side of the equation, and he was very, very good. They still managed to fight and muster a couple of runs, even getting into the position where they have the tying run at the plate, which I still don't understand why George Springer wasn't in the pinch hit situation there. But, yeah, offense, again, I mean, we've talked about it throughout the entire pregame show, and yet here we are again, two runs on three hits, and they lose a ball game that was, for the most part, relatively close. Like, they had a chance.
That is Danielli Franceschi. I'm Show Atley. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers if you'd like to vent. Text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. You guys know the drill. Just no cussing, but you can say more or less whatever you want.
Yes, no cussing.
I had mentioned that stat about the being 0 for 35 since the All-Star break. Yep. So Stathead, the best team in that same span, when trailing by three or more runs since the All-Star break last year, the best team are the Rangers, who are 8-30.
Wow.
Okay, so if you were to extrapolate that out to a 35-game span for the Blue Jays, they'd in theory, if you take the best winning percentage that the Rangers had, which it was like, that's like 2-11 or something.
Yep.
You'd expect them to go 3-32 instead of like 0-35. So it's not like a massive margin, but at the same time, having a single win is absolutely not so great. I see here on the text line, 590-590, name and location, lots of texts about the Springer.
Oh yeah,
not pinch hitting IKF for Springer, and I, you know, it's a valid question. So I agree, first of all, he should have been brought up. Whatever conundrum that would have caused you in terms of positions played by not bringing him up, I think should have been secondary to just getting a better batter. And it's not to, like, crap on IKF, because I think he's largely paid fine this year. But it's you want the guy who bats leadoff, who you're paying $1 billion, to come out there. And even though this was a rest day for him as a veteran player, you still want that guy batting in a late and close situation, essentially, right? They're only down by a couple runs. A guy on base, one swing of Springer's back could have tied this game in the bottom of the ninth inning. And, so we'll have to hear what John Schneider says. The only reasoning I bet we'll hear from him, Danielli, is that we have often heard him say, okay, you manage in the sense of making sure everything lines up as optimally as possible. We've heard him say that before a couple of times with why not pinch hit decisions were not made, for example. I can only think that their thought process was, with Barger coming up after IKF, it was just an easy one-for-one swap.
For sure.
Because if this game goes to extras, you'd rather have Springer in right field than have to kind of finagle all these different things. Having said that, like, I don't really think that really matters if you're going to lose if he doesn't come up. And again, that's not to crap on IKF, but it's just you want the best possible bat in there at all times if that's possible. And it does somewhat feel like they kind of let themselves down today.
Absolutely. I mean, would you rather go out on your sword with your one of your better hitters at the plate, or all due respect to IKF, it's IKF at the plate. Like, I mean, what are we talking about here? I get it. I fully agree with you. I think that is probably the explanation we're going to get is positionally.
Like if the game had gone to extras, we'd want to have George Springer out there. I guarantee you that was part of the reason.
As we're sitting here, sort of observing and saying, okay, is George Springer up? Was he available? Answer yes, because he was indeed up and stirring in the dugout. I go take a peek at the bench, and that's where I'm like, okay, now I understand. Well, not understand. I am weary of the fact that they would prefer not to use him there, because they had already inserted IKF into the game. The only other guys they had on the bench were Springer and Alejandro Kirk. So I get it. But then I'm thinking to myself, but you just lost the game because IKF was at the plate and not George Springer. Kevin Biggio worked very hard and gave you a quality at bat.
Great AB. Great AB.
Unbelievable AB.
Great stuff from him.
To get the tying run to the plate.
Yeah.
And you didn't reward your team by putting your best foot forward in that position. That was a really frustrating situation to watch unfold here. At the end of a ball game, after you struggled offensively all day, you still had an opportunity potentially to give yourself a chance, and you did not objectively put your best foot forward.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us, 590-590, name and location. Those are the ways to reach us today. Let's go to the phones. Joining us here, Josh in Owen Sound. Josh, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jay's Talk.
Hi, guys.
Josh, you there? Hello, Mr. Josh from Owen Sound.
Hello.
All right. Go ahead.
Hello, guys.
Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm just calling to get your opinion on maybe moving Guerrero down in the batting order, just to see if we can get him going a little more.
Where would you move him, Josh?
I'm thinking maybe like sixth or seventh, maybe move everybody up a little bit and see if they can get him going.
So it's a popular topic of conversation, and Josh, appreciate your call. Thank you for joining us. Look, here's why I don't think that's a good idea.
Yep.
Okay? It's because no one else is hitting.
I'm with you.
Okay? I mean, just from today's game alone, the Blue Jays had three hits. Vladdy had 30% of the team's hits today. Okay? But in all seriousness, I totally get it. Vladdy looks – we talked for like 45 minutes in the pregame show – almost exclusively about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right? So I'm not saying this because I'm like Vladdy's biggest champion or anything, but who are you replacing him with? I'm laughing because, like, there are not a lot of other great options. Like, you'd only really be moving Vladdy down the order to appease an angry fan base, not because it would I think it wouldn't actually materially make a huge difference. Let's say you bat, I'm just looking at the lineup. Turner, Varsho, and Davis Schneider, and Bo, and Danny Jansen, all above Vladdy. Is that really going to change things? I don't think so.
Look, you know me. I am very critical of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I will say today, were his at-bats great? No, by no stretch of the imagination were they fantastic. But can I tell you who had a worse day than him? Bo Bichette had a terrible day at the plate. He had a really, really poor day. He saw 11 pitches in 4 at-bats, Joe. He saw 11 pitches. He had 6 pitches that he had faced and seen at the plate through his first 3 at-bats. Not good enough, especially when you're hitting leadoff on a day where Springer isn't in the lineup. So, and Vlad supplied through the first 3 innings the only hit of the ballgame. I don't see what moving him down necessarily accomplishes, especially right now because, to your point, who else is there? Who's moving up? If anything, you want to talk about moving down, here's where I'd move him. Okay. Move him into the 3-hole, because that's where he should be hitting, in my opinion.
Right.
He's always been a better 3-hole hitter than a 2-hole hitter throughout his entire career. He did tons of damage out of the 3-hole the last 3-plus years, including his 2021 MVP-ish season. He was fantastic out of the 3-hole. And I also think, in terms of sending a message, it's probably still far too early to pull that lever. It's only, again, I know it's frustrating. It's difficult to watch, see the team perform offensively the way that they have. But what is it? Today's game 28? It's a little bit too early, in my opinion. I'm with John Schneider on that front.
Vladdy did have, on that hit, the one hit he had today, which was one of 3 hits the team had.
Yeah.
But he smoked that ball. And, again, like, exit velo doesn't really matter. But the slider from Glasnow was down in the lower third of that zone, and he like kind of went down to go get that ball, and that might have been the best piece of hitting we saw from Vladdy all week, honestly. Yeah. Like, if you're if you like in a vacuum and you compare it to all the other ABs he's had, like literally since going back to the San Diego series last weekend in San Diego, that might be the best piece of hitting from him literally in the last 7 days. And yes, he struck out twice around that, I guess, sandwiched around that. And the second K was from Vladdy was a really bad swing. But at the same time, I don't know. You look at some of those, like Pitching Ninja does those like the overlays. I saw one today, and I'll tell you, man, one of his throws, and it's not an excuse. It just kind of goes to like
for
how
Glasnow,
for Glasnow, it's not an excuse for the Blue Jays because it's largely the same what we've seen all season. So like it's really not. But I mean, this is why Glasnow's one of the best pitchers in baseball. There were two pitch deliveries laid on top of one another. There was a 96-mile-an-hour fastball and an 86-mile-an-hour curveball. They were exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
Like the ball came out of his hand at the exact same release point, and then those balls effectively move in two completely different directions.
Do you know who the batters were?
I forget.
So you know what? It's funny. I asked that question.
I think Vladdy was one of them.
Okay, so I asked that question because there was a Dalton Varsho at-bat. And forgive me, I can't remember the exact inning, where he struck out looking on a curveball, and it was pretty clear based on the release point and the way the ball came out. Just even watching a replay of it without even overlays, you're thinking he was standing in the box, and you could see his brain processing.
Yeah.
He thought it was a fastball, and it ends up being a breaking ball that spins over the heart
insane.
Of the plate. Nuts. So yeah, that's why he's one of the really an underrated ace. He doesn't get a ton of respect for how good he actually is, because that guy is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Dodgers are in great hands with him as their ace this season.
I mean, that's why the Dodgers went out after they signed Shohei Ohtani. They went out and gave him traded for him and then gave him a bazillion dollars, right? And one of the only reasons I think we don't talk more about Kyle Glasnow is because he's gotten injured a lot in the last, like, what, 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right? I think he was getting injured a little bit when he was with the Pirates. He got injured a lot when he was with the Rays. But, I mean, look, that's a kind of an aside because, again, the offense, they managed two runs. They did get to him a little bit, and they yanked him, and then now here we are. But, that was some filthy stuff. But at the same time, I'm not sure if anyone else was out there based on what we've seen from this offense, it might have ended up being the same result anyways. But you do have to give some credit to Glasnow. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Chris in Quebec. Chris, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jay's Talk.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Love the show.
What's up, man?
First off, I'd like to say I couldn't agree with you more about putting the game in the hands of IKF when you have Springer standing there. I think that's a huge management fail to make that call. And it seems like John Schneider seems to make a lot of bad decisions when it comes to high leverage decisions in moments like that. So, you know what I mean? I'm kind of over that guy. You know what I mean? He's a nice guy, but I don't have a lot of faith in his management style. Nevertheless, the reason I called was I think that this team needs to come to realization that they're not going to win the World Series this year or next year or maybe even the year after that with the roster that's being built by our front office. And I think it's sooner that they start rebuilding and accept the fate, the sooner that the fans are going to maybe have a good team to watch. I'm a diehard fan. Like, I'm a trucker, and I listen to the games. I listen to Blair and Barker. I listen to you guys. You know, it's a major part of entertainment for me, and I can't stand listening to this team we have right now. Not only are they boring when they lose, it's just there's no entertainment value at all. I would be more content listening to them lose with a bunch of young players out there trying to rebuild than what we have right now. So I would take any asset that we have that has any equity in it at all, like Vladimir Guerrero, and I would trade him for young prospects and draft picks, and maybe do the same with Bo. I think Bo is a guy who at least works hard and is just going through a slump right now. I do have faith in Bo, but you know, we don't have a lot of assets that we could get anything for right now, and that's kind of the sad statement. We have very little assets in the minor leagues. So as somebody pointed out on Blair and Barker the other day, bring these young guys up, whether they're ready to come up to the show right now or not, let them start getting some game time, let them start playing. Except that the fact that we're gonna go through a Baltimore-style rebuild, which might take 5 years of losing a lot of games, having a lot of young guys make a lot of mistakes, but also acquiring a lot of draft picks and rebuild old school style, and maybe we can have a World Series someday.
Does a rebuild, Chris, you think, include Ross Atkins?
No. Thank you for bringing that up. I think a rebuild includes Ross Atkins finding a new career starting next year at the earliest.
Hey, Chris, look, man, I appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us. I think I speak for Blair as well when I say thank you for listening, certainly, even when it is a dismal 4-2 loss like today. You know, the rebuild stuff's really interesting because, well, first of all, Chris mentioned draft picks. You can't trade draft picks
in
Major Baseball. That would be kind of cool, though. That would be interesting. Honestly,
you know what?
If you could, I think you'd do it, honestly.
Yeah.
If you could do it to borrow from the NFL draft, which is going on right now, really, but the first round was on Thursday, and look at the Chicago Bears, right? They had that whole deal dating back to last year, and it ended with them getting the number one overall pick this year and the ninth pick. I only bring that up because you can't really do that in Major League Baseball, right? Like, it's pretty much the only sport you can't do that. You can try and do it in the NHL and the NBA. It's a little more difficult because there are lotteries in those systems, and now there is a lottery in Major League Baseball as well for like the first however many picks there is now. But I really do think rebuilding is really interesting, because obviously if you listened to me on Jay's Talk in the last like however many years, I've been pretty adamant that you don't do it. I do wonder. It should not be out of the realm of possibility. I'm not saying it's off the table, but I do genuinely wonder what the appetite is, to bring up Chris's comparison to the Baltimore Orioles, what the appetite is to lose like 100-plus games. Ooh. For 3 to 4 years, essentially.
That's a tough one.
Not just for the fans, but also for ownership. And I don't want to sound like I'm carrying water for ownership at any point, but at the same time, like, I think a big part of the reason why the Orioles lost 100-plus games is because, like, Angelo's family was really cheap. Like, they just didn't really care. They were making money hand over fist, and they didn't care. And now here we are. They're good again because they sucked for, like, 3 to 5 years. And then they sold the team to a new owner who's going to, like, spend bazillions of dollars, essentially, right?
Gosh,
I think it's a fascinating conundrum, because I really don't think it's, like, an apples-to-apples comparison. And the other half of it is you also have to hit on all of those guys, right? I mean,
The
Tigers are getting better now. They are. The Royals are getting better now.
Yep,
this is true. They are. But, like, those guys have been out in the wilderness for years. For years,
Joe,
man.
Look at the White Sox now.
Sure, the White Sox.
The White Sox. Is there any hope there? Like, any hope? Realistically, I'd be hard-pressed to see this pivot into a full-scale rebuild. Simple reasoning, man. We're staring at it right now. We're in this building. We're looking at it. The amount of money that's been invested in the outfield last year and this wonderful new fancy infield 100 level, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful ballpark now. I mean, it cost them a bunch of money. They're going to want to put people in butts in those seats in order to be able to pay some of that off. That doesn't necessarily point to a 5-year rebuild. And on top of that, Joe, in addition to that, we just went through this, did we not? Like, the team was really bad in the aftermath of, like, 2017.
Yeah, oh, man.
The team was bad.
That was like the Kendrys Morales years.
Oh, Jesus. Not a sliding doors move, but one of the most frustrating, disappointing eras in my Blue Jays
fandom. Remember, they had the offer on the table to Edwin, and then they pulled the offer.
Yep, because
they gave it to Morales.
Yep.
And then they didn't re-sign Eddie.
Correct.
Remember that?
Oh, I distinctly.
It wasn't that long ago.
I thought that was just a huge mistake. But I just, for those reasons, I really don't see it. It's because of the proximity to the most recent, quote-unquote, retooling, rebuild, what have you. And in addition, the amount of money that they've invested, the resources that they've allocated to make this place, this building, more of a ballpark. And they've put forth so many resources. They've also, to their, not to their credit, but, well, I mean, I guess in some way, shape, or form, they have invested in the team. Like, they've signed guys. They've paid money. They've invested that money thinking that this was going to be their window.
Yeah.
But it hasn't materialized. So I guess then the question becomes, what is the pressure point? What becomes the pivot point to say Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, Berríos, I think, is still a major value contract at this point. Vladdy, Bo, when do you have to make decisions on those guys? That's where I think maybe if things continue to go that the way that they're trending, yeah, we're going to have those conversations, Joe. There's no doubt.
416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. Let's get one more call in before we take a quick break. Brad in Barrie joining us on Jays Talk. Brad, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. I agree with you guys. I mean, even today, I know the Jays, we didn't get the result, but they competed. Kikuchi showed his true colors. Another good outing for him. Jay's offense didn't get going, but it was a close ball game right to the end. And it comes back to Schneider. Like, dude, why are you not going to your leadoff guy for a pitch hit chance to win? You'll sort the other stuff out later. Like, it seems to me almost every game he always makes these decisions and it's always a cautious response, you know? Look, we can't do that right now. And I've watched a lot of Jays. I've seen Cito. I've seen Bobby Cox. I've seen all these great managers of Jays. And I put Gibby in that mix too, because never, ever was Gibby micromanaged or told that he's going to pull a pitcher or what happened last fall. And I just feel this resonates into this season. And really, I think the big problem is the manager. I think this club is built to win. They've got a lot of good players. And Vladimir Guerrero, any team will take him. Can you imagine him in the Dodgers lineup? I mean, come on, man. He's a three-hitter in and out, especially with Bichette there, Bichette batting two. Schneider is the problem, guys. And we know this. We all know it.
Hey, Brad, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. Look, I said this before about John Schneider. I'm actually curious where you fall on this, Daniele. But
sure.
I actually, because Brad brought up the point of how, like, John Gibbons and so on, they were never micromanaged by spreadsheets and so on, right?
Yep.
And I think that's true. I think Brad is very, very correct in that aspect. And I think that's a big part of the reason why he's probably not a manager right now in Major League Baseball. I know he's a coach now. He's a bench coach now. I know that. But I think a big part of the reason why he's not a Major League manager is because he doesn't really adhere to a lot of those statistics. And that's why I don't put a lot of it at John Schneider's feet, only because I don't really think the problem is John Schneider, because I'm not really sure he's the one making those decisions. You know what I mean? Like, I really do think that there is a large part of it has to do with, like, their, and again, this goes back to the, and again, Brad brought it up, it goes back to Barrios being pulled last year. But a lot of these decisions are kind of, like, made already, right? I mean, Blair and Barker love to use the term the khakis, but, like, the khakis are the ones making those decisions. Like, I truly don't believe John Schneider's one, like, you know, pulling the strings here. And, you know, and that's kind of, like, its own separate problem, right? Like, I really, and we get texts and calls and people are like, oh, well, will John Schneider stand up for what's right and, like, defy the puppet masters and so on? And it's like, that's not really how it works, unfortunately, right? Like, you're not gonna give up, like, get fired because, like, you know, I don't know. Maybe he should. I don't know. But I genuinely hesitate to put a lot of it at John Schneider's feet, just because a lot of baseball teams, including the one in the other dugout, does their decision making exactly like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you, Dave Roberts, I guarantee you, is making decisions exactly the same way John Schneider is.
I don't know if it's identical.
Or Kevin Cash, for example.
No. Totally. Kevin Cash is a more
maybe worse
prudent example. It might be even worse. You're absolutely right. It's not exclusive to this team. I think that's what you're getting at here, is it's not exclusive to this ball club. I am definitely in agreement in saying that this is, like, we watched the game today, and I'm not sitting back here and being like, gosh, what is John Schneider thinking, not putting George Springer in the game? Really? Like, what do you do? Or any decision pertaining to starting lineups or bullpen usage? Like, at the end of the day, a lot of this is collaborative. We've heard them speak openly about this. I do wonder, just tinfoil hat here, if there ever does reach a point where a manager says, you know what, I can't. Like, I'm sorry.
Maybe if he knows he's getting fired.
That's my point. Right. So does it take a pressure point like that to say, forget it, I am going to make the decisions independent of what I'm being told or what the front office wants me to do or what the khakis want me to do? That's when I'm going to put my foot down and do what I think is best. At least go out on your own sword, man. Like, I'm looking at the text line. I'm looking at the different tweets that we've gotten throughout the course of the game. And there's a lot of criticism, a lot of skepticism directed towards John Schneider. And I am with you in saying that I think some of that is misplaced, because I think it's a larger conversation than just the manager. The problem is he will be the scapegoat.
Exactly.
He will bear
the brunt of it.
That's
exactly what it's
That is what yeah. is tricky for him yeah. in that position.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. You look across the dugout, whoever it is on the other side, they too are doing similar things. Maybe not identical to the same team, but they are doing the exact same, a lot of the same things to a different result. And at a certain point, results matter.
I just look. Let's just say the team says, you know what? There's got to be some kind of change. A new voice has to be had, and they fire Schneider. I don't think they will, honestly. But let's say they do, and Don Mattingly is the new manager, or DeMarlo Hale is the new manager. I don't think it's going to be a whole lot different.
Oh, I agree.
Really, I genuinely believe that.
Completely agree.
And that I think stems from like an organizational philosophy more than like John Schneider being like, I'm not going to send out George Springer for IKF. I genuinely think that.
Yep.
But hey, look, let's take a quick break. When we come back here, we'll get some way more phone calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll also read some texts, which we have not done so far. So 590-590, name and location. Lots still to come here on Jay's Talk. Show and Daniele with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Is there an element to when a guy like he's clearly pushing, other guys are pushing in different ways, Farsh laying out for that ball, some of the other plays that do you see maybe guys doing that sort of more than they should, and that sometimes backfiring a little bit?
No, not at all. Nope. Farsh is the best defensive outfielder in baseball. No, not at all.
Well, short and direct from John Schneider. That was Shai Davidi of Sportsnet asking him that question about players maybe pushing a little bit. And I dare say Kikuchi did get a little hosed on maybe the game's run, because that was a Mookie Betts triple, I think it was scored as.
Correct.
And Varsho, a rare misplay from Dalton Varsho, who I actually do agree with Schneider. He is the best defensive outfielder in baseball. He's a phenomenal outfielder defensively, but he for whatever reason misread that ball. Like, that it wasn't like the ball just skipped past his glove. The ball landed like 3 feet in front of him, which I'm not exaggerating. I don't think I have ever seen him do that. Honestly.
No,
I don't think
true.
That's an exaggeration.
No, that was a rare miscue by Dalton Varsho. And statistically speaking, you're right, Joe. You're correct. Because he's like right up there. Notes above average, defensive run saved, defensive run value, all these different metrics. He's that's factual. Like, John Schneider gave us a fact.
Yeah.
He's up there. We can't dispute that one. That was unfortunate. And I was wondering in my head, could they not rule that a hit and then an error to take that instead of it being an unearned run?
Yeah.
Like, is that actually plausible? I don't know. I'm curious.
But I think it's because, like, you know why it wasn't scored like that? It's because Varsho, like, made a conscious decision to dive when he, like, probably didn't have to, right? Because if he had just pulled up in front of that ball,
it would have been a single,
right?
Yeah, but can't they still score that as, like, a single plus a fielding error?
Man, Roger Lajoie was right here.
He was right there.
We should have asked him before he
Raj!
Left. Raj, if you're listening, come back into the
next
booth.
Time, Raj is on. We're going to need the explanation about the Dalton Varsho hit there off the bat of Mookie Betts. What happened?
That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Atley. You're listening to Jay's Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can certainly text us 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. You know, let's talk a little bit about Kikuchi, because we kind of talked around him a little bit today. Before we go back to the phones and the text. And I mentioned the misread from Varsho, which probably cost him one of those four runs he gave up. Early on, I thought he was hanging some pitches. You know, he kind of hung all of his pitches, right? He hung the curveball once.
Yep.
He hung the slider a couple of times. The fastball got hit. The ball was like they were right in the middle of the zone for some of the game's best hitters. But the thing that was really getting me was that it was not just Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani who was slamming balls off of him. It was Miguel Rojas and Kike Hernandez and Andy Páez, who I think are all still good players. Chris Taylor, who obviously is not like coming into this game. Chris Taylor had an average of 0.44, which is like terrible, but he's not that kind of player. I think based on his career, the guy's like 33 or 34. I was a little unimpressed with what Kikuchi had done early on. Having said that, Kikuchi managed to grind through six innings And his final stat line was a 6 innings, 9 hits, 4 runs, all of which were earned. No walks, which is definitely a positive. 3 strikeouts. He picked it up. He absolutely picked it up as the game went on. And I think in the maybe for parts of the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth certainly as well, he was great. I just like he was by far the worst thing about the Blue Jays today. Maybe if you're judging Kikuchi's outing, it's at best okay. But, I mean, like, given that he has been excellent all season long, I'm not going to hang this all on Kikuchi, given that, the offense was a no-show. But, I mean, again, it's just another example of Jays pitchers having to walk an extremely fine tightrope because of the lack of run support.
Yeah, I thought Kikuchi overall was fine, Joe. Speaking of Chris Taylor, you want to know why he was in the lineup today?
Mm.
Career 375 hitter against Yusei Kikuchi. That's why he was in the lineup today.
There you go.
So there's some stats to back up the rationale of the manager and his posse for putting him in the game and in the lineup today. No, I think your assessment was spot on. You know, I thought I admired the way Kikuchi battled. You know, I thought after the third inning, he settled in nicely to get through six. There was a bit of an elevated pitch count early on in the ball game. I thought in the first inning, you know, he didn't get the benefit of some usually fantastic defense out in center field, as we've already covered.
Yep.
In addition to that, I thought the strike zone was a little bit pinched for him at times.
Right? I agree with that.
Especially in that first inning. Yeah. You could see he was jazzed up for this start. He was pumping velo. Like, he was sitting 97, 98. He's more of a 95-ish guy, typically. So you could see that he was excited and amped up for the start. But then once he got past the third inning, I thought he settled in fine, and to go six where he allows 4 while still, I mean, I think it was 9 hits that the Dodgers manufactured and mustered against him. That's, I think, a sign of a good pitcher because he still managed to keep his team in the game even though he didn't have his best stuff. And on most days for most teams, that's what you want to see from a guy.
Yeah.
So he gave the Jays a chance to stay in that ball game, despite giving up 4, despite not having his A-plus stuff like we've seen for the bulk of this season so far.
Yeah, it's just I think you're able to get away with it sometimes against lesser teams. And there was a text here on the text line. I just lost it, mainly because there's a million texts coming in, which I appreciate, everyone.
Yeah,
but there was a text that basically said, you know, so it was something along the lines of, you know, it doesn't really matter about the pitchers, and it does. You know, it all is focused on the front office, which I do think is true. But at the same time, I do think we still have to give some credit to Kikuchi, just because, you know, largely he's been there all season long, and there was good all season long. And there was another text about how, like, the Dodgers are showing the Jays what a good team is. Now, I only take exception to that in the sense that there are almost no other teams in baseball that are built like the Dodgers are, right? What, the Braves, I guess?
It.
Yeah, okay. So let's say the Braves,
yeah.
Right? But and the Braves have been built by someone that everyone is very familiar with, unfortunately, which I know sticks in the craw of a lot of people listening. But I'm just saying that, like, there is a clear delineation between obviously the Dodgers and the Blue Jays, but I would say the Dodgers and the Braves, and then it's kind of everyone else. I would say, even for the best teams in the American League, because obviously the Dodgers and the Braves are both in the NL, if you look at the AL, the best teams in the AL are still a cut below the Dodgers and the Braves. I'm just saying, like, just as a neutral observer of the other teams,
yeah,
right? Like the Yankees,
for sure.
And the Astros have kind of scuffled, but yeah, the Rangers certainly. Yep. Even some of the better teams in the Central, the Orioles.
We know the Central is what the Central is.
Exactly, it is what it is. But even the best teams, the Yankees, the Orioles, and the Rangers are still, I don't know, they're not as good as the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I think is the truth, really.
Clear step down. Yep.
I see. Let's go to the text line. We haven't read any texts, and
I want to make sure we get to.
We will get that as well. I see one here, Peter in Sharon, but stuck on the DVP right now. Godspeed, Peter. I'm going to be making that drive very shortly, so I feel you. I'm with you that Schneider isn't their biggest problem, even if decisions aren't optimal. Vladdy is a good player worth $19 million. No, but moving him in the order, that's more of a punishment, not suddenly going to make him hit better.
Yep.
Plus, as you said, no one to put there. I think the problem is the front office. The team has not been built to win. Alex in New Brunswick, the issue is the front office 100%. Ownership has got to step up. Look at Atkins' trades. Look at offseason. Look at the farm system. They berated Alex Anthopoulos for the farm when they took over, but it's not one player. It's the entire lineup 2 years now. That's a systemic problem. Hitters don't all just suck. Everyone must go. And there was another one here about calling. Here it is. Zach from Mississauga. Zach says Chris, and Chris from Quebec had called in earlier, and we appreciate that. Chris says, Zach says, Chris is right. Time to rebuild. I'd rather lose 100 games than lose like this. Call up Aurelvis and let the kids play. And I find that really interesting because I do wonder what the threshold is for being like, you know what? Like, because the big reason why Aurelvis is not playing on the team right now is because of his defensive work. That's yes. why. That's yep. it's exactly why he's made quite a few errors down in the minors.
Yep.
And we know this team prizes run prevention and defense. So that is the reason why his bat is not hitting for the Blue Jays right now. But what is the threshold for saying, you know what, we can't take this anymore? This is untenable, essentially. Like, not even for you and me, and not even for the fans. Like, for the Blue Jays,
for the team,
yeah. right? And like, positional log jam be damned. Like, he can only play second base. Like, whatever it takes. Like, trade someone to get Aurelvis' bat in the lineup, even if it means they're a little more sloppy defensively. Like, what is that threshold? Do they have to be 10 games under 500? Like, I actually don't know what the answer to that question
is. Does it take another 10 games of scoring fewer runs? They've done it 5 straight times. Show, you want to know something crazy, too. Like, we talked in the pregame about the 5-run streak, the fact that now it's 18 games in a row they have scored 5 runs or fewer. They've only scored 5 runs or more 2 times this year. When is the threshold? Like, when is enough enough? Oof. I and it's funny because I posed this question to you off air where I said, what, like, you know, we talked about Barger. And mind you, Addison Barger, I thought, had a pretty interesting day out in right field.
Yeah, you know what? I was impressed.
Arm looked good. He made some good plays defensively.
What a rocket of a throw. Good heavens.
100-mile-an-hour throw to third base, frozen rope. Unbelievable. But, you know, he's here because of his positional fit. If we're talking about a bat that is more ready to play in the major leagues right now, it's Aurelvis Martinez. Because this team sorely lacks power, and Aurelvis Martinez supplies power. But he's not here because, as you put it, yes, the defense, but it's also the positional fit.
Yeah.
The logjam that would be an impending situation if he were to get promoted from AAA. He's arguably the most seasoned out of any of the young prospects that were in
the
system.
He's played a lot of minor league games.
Yes, he's played tons. Yeah. He's played multiple full seasons, full-skill seasons across different levels of the minor leagues, whereas other guys, even Barger or Davis Schneider, who are on this roster now, didn't have that same level of experience in the minor leagues. I think at some point, something's got to give. Something's got to give, and if the offense keeps performing the way that it has and it continues to trend in this direction, how can you not just be tempted to say, you know what, this guy's mashing, man. We'd be doing ourselves a disservice by not calling him up and inserting him into our lineup just for the pure curiosity of seeing what he can provide.
So we're at the end of April here, okay? So we have seen, I think as of tomorrow, because the season started on March 28th and tomorrow's April 28th, so we'll have gotten exactly a month through the Major League season, Daniele. And you look at what's coming up next in the next month, essentially. So we're almost into May.
Yep.
Tomorrow's Sunday. It's the series finale against the Dodgers. Then you got the Royals here for 3. There's a day off on Thursday. You play the Nationals, the Phillies, the Twins, the Orioles, the Rays, the White Sox. That takes you basically to this point next month, essentially.
Ooh.
So, I mean, it's not the hardest schedule in the world. It's also not that easy because you do get to play the Nationals. The Twins have not been playing great. They're also not awful either. They've been dealing with some injuries, but still. But, I mean, you have to play the Phillies. You got to play the Orioles. The Rays are always a tough out.
Absolutely.
The Royals have been much better this season.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not like a cakewalk, and it never is for any team, but it's not a cakewalk for you. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, if that's the place you're at and you're losing 2 of 3 to the Orioles, and you're losing 2 of 3 to the Royals, and you're losing 2 of 3 to the Rays. Is that the threshold for saying, bleep it, bring up Aurelvis? Honestly, I think I'm at the point where you just do it now.
Same.
Like, you do it now, and you make a decision on, I don't think Davis Schneider can go anywhere. He's been one of the only guys who consistently performs.
Yep.
I know he still has the weakness with the high fastball, but, I mean, that's something you can work on, and he, again, we saw it today, for God's sakes, right?
I mean, respectfully, if Daniel Vogelbach is on this roster,
sure,
he's not getting regular at-bats. What's the point?
What's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah.
Like, that's not even a slight on him, Joe. That's actually to his defense. I'm coming to his defense. If he's there just to occupy a spot and sit in the dugout, what's the point?
Yeah, I agree.
Where's the value?
Like, is he really just there to keep, like, the bench warm for Joey Votto? Like, really?
Really?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. That is mind-boggling to me. But I'm with you. What's the worst thing that can happen if you promote that guy.
You give up a couple more extra runs, I guess.
Is the worst thing that he's going to end up like Jackson Holliday and needing to go down again?
Yeah.
If that's the case, who cares? Who cares? If you really think you're going to damage a prospect that much by calling him up and then he has to go back down? Like, I look at what happened with Jackson Holliday earlier this week, and he had two hits in the first, 3 weeks he was in the big leagues. Tough go for him.
Tough go. It's
tough. Young guy.
It is.
Number one prospect.
Yeah.
Really difficult. Do I think that's going to break him as a player? No. And if they had, and if anybody thinks and is fearful that that'll break him, then he probably shouldn't be in that position to begin with.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of the sport. So I'm with you. I've been monitoring this for the last week or so and saying, man, just get him up here. Let's see it. Just get him up here. Give him a run.
I see a text from Eric in Toronto. Don't move Vladdy down. Move Bichette down and move Biggio up. He's third in OBP at 351. Play Schneider more. I know we heard from John Schneider today, who basically said that they're not exploring moving off the top, like moving the order, changing the order from Springer, Bo, and Vladdy, or Springer, Vladdy, Bo, rather.
Correct.
What's it gonna take? I mean, it sounds like nothing will change that the mind of not just John Schneider but the front office, honestly.
Until the analytics tell them otherwise.
Yeah, I wonder what the breaking point is. Like, what's the boiling point of when the water pours out of the kettle here and you can no longer really ignore it? Essentially, it's just, is it really gonna be when the team is like, when we have to wait to the All-Star break to know what we kind of already know, kind of? Like, don't get me wrong, I do understand in a 162-game season, it is, in theory, still early, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not so early that you don't know anything about the team, right? That's what I mean. Like, you can still make some, if not, definite declarations.
Yeah.
You can still make some observations and change things accordingly. Other teams do it all the time.
Do you recall the conversation you and I had on the eve of opening day?
Oh, God.
And
was it
we
positive?
Talked about, well, some positive,
okay,
some negative.
All right.
Far more positive in terms of some of the key players on this team, if I recall correctly, because we were super bullish on a lot of those guys. Remember we went through and we did some of our, not bold predictions, but some of our, I guess bold predictions, mm-hmm, or bold prognostications about guys we felt highly about,
sure,
coming in.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the things I said was, the only thing I don't want to hear is this, it's early trope. Please stop. And a lot of it is because the team almost looks identical to a lot of the, the roster, the personnel, it's all pretty much identical to what it was last year, with the exception of Justin Turner swapping in for Brandon Belt and maybe David Schneider getting more regular at-bats, Ernie Clement. Outside of that, the pieces, the core is the same. And yet, you just referenced it. I know it's early in a 162-game schedule. I get it. But, I think at some point the results do need to count for something. Like, guys are hitting 200. Guys are in the top 30 of your order hitting 200.
Yeah.
I mean, when are you going to have some accountability for performance and say, Vlad or Bo, sorry, guys. Like, you better start hitting. You better start hitting, or else we're going to have to. You're going to force our hand, and we need to do something because the team always comes first. We have to do something for the best interest of the ball club.
I see a text from Ruben in Alberta. The Jays have been underperforming offensively for 2-plus seasons now, yet the approach and the hitting coach remains the same. No adjustments between AB's games or series. So what is the definition of insanity? Which, as we know, it's doing the same thing over and over again, Ruben. I know you know that. I see a text here from... Actually, there's no name on this one, but it says, so please do leave your name and location just so we can give you a shout-out. But this text says, suppose the Jays lose tomorrow's game in another lopsided fashion. I can't think of a clearer message that could be sent to the Khakis that this team is not a contender and the stat sheets and analytics prove it. Do you think the Khakis are panicking, or are they still oblivious to the fact they built a fourth-place AL East team with a $226 million payroll, which is the ninth highest in Major League Baseball? I don't think they're oblivious to it. I really don't.
I'm with you.
I do not think, because I don't think it's possible to be oblivious to it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? At the same time, I do believe that a lot of that, we just talked about that, people saying it's early and so on. I do think that a lot of teams very much subscribe to that. Because, again, to use the idea of analytics and informing your decision-making process, the analytics will, for a lot of people, bear out that, over 162 games, it'll get better. Even if, the eye test doesn't always suggest that, the analytics do suggest that, right? Which, I mean, again, that's the same conversation we always have about, what's the balancing act between correctly using analytics to inform decision-making processes versus balancing it with what your eye and what your gut is telling you, and like without analytics being able to get into a person's brain, for example.
That's where the hypocrisy lies, and here's why. Because last year, they went through that entire process. At the All-Star break, at the trade deadline, that was the messaging. We believe that things will turn. It's a combination of some bad luck with some underperforming, but analytically, our method and our process tells us that things will self-correct. Did they ever self-correct? No. No. So the hypocrisy lies in you can't subscribe to that same thought process this time around. You just sat through 162 games of that.
Yeah.
That is where there's a fault in that line of thinking. That philosophy will not work this time because you just did it for a full season, a full entire calendar year, and it didn't work. It failed you. At some point, you have to adapt your line of thinking and find something that works for you.
I see a text here from, let's see here, Peter in PEI. Would have liked to see Schneider run out of the dugout early on to argue balls and strikes for Kikuchi. I feel like they are getting used to losing. I don't see any passion. They do look very passive at times,
they
I
do.
Will say. Yeah. And that's why I did like what I saw from Addison Barger when he first got called up. And even in today's game, I know he's going through a tough time offensively, but he does look like someone who wants to be there, essentially, right, which I kind of like. So that's been something fun. Again, you mentioned it, the throw from right field to third, which was clocked at 100.6 miles an hour. He also fought off a few 100-mile-an-hour pitches today from different guys. So, again, I want to see more from him, but a tough start. Before we go, I know this is just like a silly thing to end on, just because we only have a couple minutes left here. What did you think of the Romano light show in this game? Kind of strange, right? Like, this might sound very old man yells at cloud, but they did the whole, like, turn down the lights.
Yeah.
Turn your flashlights on entrance when he came in for the top of the ninth. In my opinion, that should be only played or done
saves.
For saves. Yeah, or like when the team is winning. Like maybe not a save
sure.
situation, but you're coming in to end the game for a win. Like only in those situations. I was kind of surprised.
Didn't mind it. Here's why. Gave the fans something to cheer about. Yeah. I'm all for the fans.
The fans loved it.
Man with the people. They had the flashlights out. Everybody was excited. That's the loudest maybe the building was all day
you're
when
the
lights went down and it was all the light show was happening. Speaking of which, and Romano, this is from Justin on Twitter. He needs to get work in somehow. He can't sit on the bench for a few days in a row waiting for a save opportunity because that was in response to a tweet that I had where I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about Jordan Romano pitching just for the sake of pitching. I didn't like that too much.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't really love it either.
19
but
pitches and he was out. He didn't even finish the inning.
Jimmy Garcia, too. He got out there late, too. We'll see if they pitch tomorrow. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Rexdale and Daniele's neck of the woods, Vaughn.
Oh, let's go.
Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at Crown.com. Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Sho Ali. Jesse Rumanov in with me tomorrow. He and I will put a bow on the Jays-Dodgers series. We'll talk to you later.